Hey everyone, I really do appreciate you guys listening this week. Please check out the new Myopia site. It looks great. And check out the new Dude Letter site. It's growing and it's fantastic. This week on Myopia Defender Childhood, we learned what Wolverine really likes. Yellow spandex. Well, at least not leather. We watched X-Men. Was Cyclops always this douchey?
Ladies and gentlemen, we are now seeing the beginnings of another stage of human evolution.
In every human being,
there's not many people that'll understand people like us.
There exists the genetic code.
You'll be safe here.
What kind of place is this?
You're not the only one with gifts.
For mutation.
The truth is, mutants are very real. And they are among us. We must know who they are, and above all, what they can do.
A change is coming.
Are you a God-fearing man, Senator?
And those we fear...
Magneto believes that a war is brewing between mutants and the rest of humanity.
...will be all that can save us.
If no one is equipped to oppose them, humanity's days could be over.
You're a mutant. The whole world out there is full of people that hate and fear you, and you're wasting your time trying to protect them? You sure you're on the right side?
I have made the first move. That is all I know.
He could wipe out everyone in New York City.
Logan, help us. Fight with us.
I'll take care of you.
We are the future, not them.
Settle this.
We're not what you think. Not all of us.
Hello, Marvel Universe! The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
Welcome to Myopia Defender Childhood! This week, we watched 2000's X-Men, colon, no subtitle, the movie version of the popular stand-up arcade game. I'm Nick Hoffman, owner of Myopia Defender Childhood, I guess, and Dude Letter Podcasting. CEO of Dude Letter Podcasting and host of Myopia Defender Childhood and editor-in-chief of DudeLetter.com. And on panel we have...
Matt.
Just regular Matt.
Just regular Matt.
Matthew W. Quinn.
Lauren.
Jeremy.
Esquire.
PhD.
Doctor. We don't really have a defendant here. I think we all generally like this movie. No one came up and said right off the bat that I hate this coming in. So anyone want to give some early thoughts? We should have planned this beforehand, but I'm not a planner. Go ahead.
I like what they did with Magneto, because Magneto is the X-Men villain you're supposed to sympathize with because he's a traumatized Holocaust survivor who thinks another one's coming again. And so they start out with him in the camp, and then you see at least one ominous shot of the tattoo on his arm.
Yeah. You don't get too many action adventure movies that start off with a Holocaust scene. I mean, you know, especially kids' movies. I'm going to throw that out there.
Was this meant to be a kids' movie?
PG-13. I mean, you're right, but...
PG-13 for action violence. I think there's very much cursing, and there's no suggestive stuff.
Well, right. There's only blood in a couple scenes. you know, which is...
There's some suggestive glances.
Yeah, we should get into
the... You know what suggestive glances lead to.
Being roguish. But we actually should talk a little bit about the relationship. Before we do, Jeremy, you want to give us a plot summary? I mean, we could ask Lauren.
I'm going to saddle you with that one. Go for it.
I didn't think that was going to happen. So, Lauren, do you think you got the plot?
Yeah. So, this is the very first X-Men movie. It's the one that started all the Marvel comic movies, basically. And it just starts, just like Matt alluded to, in the Holocaust with Magneto. And it kind of shows, you know, introduces all the characters, you know, hodgepodge that it could. First, there's, you know, I think first it shows Rogue. Mm-hmm. And then Wolverine picks her up, and there's fighting. Help me out, guys.
Mm. No, we pretty much the whole movie right there.
No, no, we can get there. Now, for those of you who didn't grow up with this, at this point, I was not a comic book person, per se, but I knew the X-Men through the animated TV show, the one.
Yeah. Yep.
Which went in and out of being very, very good to very bizarre.
I was so disappointed there weren't Sentinels in this movie when I first watched it.
Yes.
Really, there aren't Sentinels in any of the movies.
Days of Future Past.
These names are not helpful. You know, traditionally, you number your sequels if they're supposed to relate.
X-Men 7.
Yeah, they didn't even go for, like, X squared for the sequel. How amazing would that have been? I mean, come on. Then they could have gone X cube.
X-3-men.
Yeah.
Okay, so possibly more helpful.
The prequel could have been the root of X.
The 50s, is it the square root of X?
Oh, I almost want to edit it.
So many opportunities.
I wish we could mic the audience because, you know, regular panelists, Madison is just, ha! Off mic, which is great.
I have a few good ones every now and then.
Yep. Yeah. In Days of Future Past.
So bad guys do some sinister things.
So in case you're curious, we're recording this because, obviously, Apocalypse just came out, and this will come out. Well, for you guys, this will come out in 4 days or whatever. This will come out next Thursday. So it's worth mentioning that this is the beginning of a trilogy where the third one sucked. And people ask me, so are you going to do the third one now that it's 10 years old? No, because you couldn't bring me to watch it. Although Jeremy has reminded me that it might be so bad it's good. So maybe we'll see.
There's some good characters in the third one.
Angel shows up. I remember that.
Yeah, the Juggernaut bitch.
Yeah. Vinny Jones,
like,
come on.
Him in that movie, but I like the character Juggernaut, so...
Alcohol eases pain. I do want to say, by that point, hadn't the E-Bombs world, like, I'm the Juggernaut bitch thing come around? So was he really writing the script off of, like, internet memes? throwing it out there.
I mean, isn't that what all movies are today?
I was actually going to ask this. Is this an original story, or did he base it off some comic book story somewhere?
Here's the problem with X-Men. I couldn't tell you. There's 9 simultaneous strips running at once. Gotcha. It could have been.
The X-Men has been going on for like 50 years. I mean, it doesn't seem like any X-Men plot I'm aware of, but I...
And it's a pretty generic plot.
Well, and to Matt's point, something like Dark Phoenix, which is a big deal, a huge saga, Days of Future Past, the same way, they're almost afraid to do because comic book nerds fling poo whenever someone does those kinds of things because they'll get something wrong. So it makes sense. And this is a good introduction of the characters, which we should kind of trap dance through. The bad guys are Toad, who's useless. He has a tongue, and he's a Toad. Although apparently at one point he spits goo into someone's face and they nearly suffocate.
Yeah, there's a TV trope, new powers as plot demands. So yeah, Jean Grey's got him frozen with her telekinesis. Okay, I'll cover in suffocation spew.
So after the money shot...
you went there.
The problem is, none of these characters, except for Wolverine, have very well, and Rogue, have very well-defined character. Even Rogue's, though, isn't well-defined.
Because she
sucks the power away, but for how long?
Because we don't really get true introductions to any of the other characters.
That's true. So you have, the bad guys are Magneto, who is played by Ian McKellen, who, like we mentioned, started in a Holocaust concentration camp, and is attracted to metal because he's magnetic, but not all metal is possibly magnetized, so don't worry about that. You have Toad, who's stretchy, can jump.
You're going to get crucified for these power descriptions.
But that's what it is. He manipulates metal and can control metal, but all metal, regardless of whether or not it can actually be magnetized in real life. Happy?
I mean, it's not
I never thought about that. That's a pretty good point.
Well, I mean, like, adamantium is magic, right? It's a MacGuffin. It's flubber. You can say it's magnetic or not. Who cares? But copper's... you can't make everything magnetic.
But he does, because it's a plot.
He manipulates magnetic fields and just does things magically.
Like the Earth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, you remember the subtitle in the camp, you know, electricity buzzing when he's pulling the gate.
I thought the kid was being tased, but it wasn't that. No. It was just magic. No. You have Mystique, played at this point by Rebecca Romaine Stamos. But then Rebecca
Romaine.
Better
than Jennifer Lawrence, there, I said it.
Yeah, we... Sigh.
But that's totally who I would be if I was a super. I would totally want to be Mystique. That's a good question. Who would you guys want to be if you were one of the X-Men? I would totally want to be Mystique. She can be anybody, and it's amazing. And she's brought up all the time. Yeah, just in this movie.
It is the most useful because, as made the point, she can blend, right?
Well, she can also get the cheap version of everyone else's powers. Like she had Wolverine's claws, for example, that didn't last very long against Wolverine.
She's kind of a different version of Rogue.
Yeah, I like her. See, but the other problem with your question is, in this movie, a lot of people's powers suck. Because, like, Storm, theoretically, should be very powerful, but she's kind of powerful in one scene.
Exactly.
It's the scene that they decide to spend a little money on.
But, like, you need wind machines to make, like, wind blow. They do that once. But she doesn't even make it rain, which she should.
She does some heavy fog.
She does. And she but I mean again, she's Zeus. She's throwing around lightning bolts. But not here. She's kind of like,
Wolverine, really it's just a clause, if you think about it. He's just like a cat.
But then he's just a badass. But
right. Like, but the way they portray it, he's badass.
But that's the thing. Lauren, you're right. Mm-hmm. He should have zero power except for like healing, but he's unconscious half this movie.
Right.
He gets roofied. But he pulls it off. No other character pulls it off.
Totally.
If you were a woman who could control the weather, you should be the most empowered, strong female character. But Halle Berry's like...
She gets that one great line, though.
Matt, you and I have
you mean
very...
that terrible
I'm
going to
call you W because both Matt's are on... W, tell me what that line is that's so great.
Well, I thought it was really... I thought it was... Well, when I was younger, I thought it was really fun. And I would just find it amusing where she's fighting Toad and she says, you know... What happens to Toad that's struck by lightning? The same thing happens to everything else and just fries him.
Ha! He should have been chicken. Then it would have made more sense.
But Toad
should have been fried. Toad should have been chicken. Then but
he's
fried.
He's called Toad because he can bounce around like that, and he's got the 20-foot tongue.
Would this movie really be different if he was a chicken person?
What powers would a mutant named Chicken have?
As we said, he can fly.
Rake someone to death with your feet? That's actually a chicken power.
He'd have claws and talons.
Shoot feathers, magical,
shoot eggs out of his ass.
Make magic eggs.
He'd be covered in feathers. I mean, like, okay, here's the thing.
That's my new comic.
Foghorn. Leghorn.
I'm making a comic book of Chicken Boy, and you guys are going to love it.
I was going to say, like...
Let me know when the Kickstarter goes up.
Yeah. To Lauren's point, this seems like it was written by the guys who wrote The Tick, where it's just like, you know what happens to frogs with lightning, my old chum? The same... Like, you know, it's just so stupid. It's so dumb. Ugh, whatever. That's pretty much all the bad guys. There's three bad guys, or four, or Sabretooth. Yeah. Sabretooth.
How could you forget Sabretooth?
Because he looks like a prop
of... Senator... The senator's
he a turns
guy.
Into a goo guy, yeah. He turns into
a good guy?
And a goo guy. A goo guy, too, when he dies.
Senator Kelly's a tool, but he does have this dying line. It's pretty good.
Blob. What? Don't leave me alone?
No, his line is, well, you got one less person to be afraid of, and then he dies.
That's because he convinced her?
Or he's dead.
Or because he's going to die?
Well, I think maybe he's... Well, a combination was dying, and maybe he finally understood something.
I thought it was supposed to... it's fake impact. It's like how you end an after-school special. You know, just like... And I guess we all learned something today.
Well, Nick, my favorite line was... Every time... It hurts every time.
Oh, God. Okay, so Rogue is in the car with Wolverine after a bare-knuckle boxing match where Wolverine paralyzes a guy. And he takes the claws out, and she goes, does it hurt? And he goes, every time.
Every
He's been
time.
Doing it for, like, how many years now?
The guy's at least 200 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, over a century. And I forget his real name, too.
Logan.
No. That's not his real name. Nerds are going to crucify me for this. So it's James something.
James Howlett.
James Howlett. Thank you. And then when they erase his memory, he picks up the name Logan somewhere.
Old comic books of, like, old English Wolverine, like...
There are Wolverine origins.
There's a Wolverine origin comic. He was born in Canada in the 1800s.
Like, drinking tea and, like,
He was from like a rich logging family, I think.
Well, if he was from Canada, he was drinking syrup.
Straight from the tree. Carves, like, cuts into the tree, his claws, and starts drinking it right out of the
tree. I just imagine like a Ren and Stimpy style, like he pops the head off a beaver and he's just drinking out of it. And...
But Magneto wants to turn people into
mutants.
Yeah. And he has a special machine.
So this is kind of where the metaphor of him being Jewish breaks down.
Well, going to what Laura said about the plot, that's the fatal flaw of the entire movie. If the senator had become a mutant, what Magneto would have theoretically caused world peace.
Yes.
Hey, everyone's a mutant. Cool.
I've learned my lesson. Thanks,
that's,
guys.
Well, that's why it's only in the second movie they character assassinate him by having him want to kill all humans. And in this one, he just wants to preserve mutants from being exterminated by any and all means necessary. If that means having mutants take over the world, great.
Well, I mean, but here's the problem that Matt and I are going to struggle with. In the comics, sometimes Magneto's one way, and sometimes he's another way. Like, and that's kind of the problem that they have here when you boil down an entire, well, like you said, 50-some-odd years of comics. You have to pick which character you're writing for. And so Magneto's plot here is, as Lauren was saying, there's this weird magnetic device that doesn't make sense, but it looks like a toy you'd get at Spencer's Gift, where things spin around and they start to glow. And it turns the Senator Kelly, into a stretchy Mr. Fantastic, effectively. Right? Another...
Reminded me of that Armstrong.
I would call him the human jellyfish.
It reminded me of Stretch Armstrong.
Yeah. Pick your stretchable.
Well, he does have that hair.
Yeah.
He does. Oh, that hair. He uses the stretchiness to escape from Magneto, fall to his death, but not his death, swim ashore, freak out some children. To Matt's point, we have to get heals, which doesn't make sense, out of his back. We have this kind of foreshadowing in which a kid is poking a jellyfish with a stick, because he's going to turn into a jellyfish, I guess, because jellyfishes explode with water. Whatever. Stupid. It's very stupid. But yeah, Magneto's plot is to turn all of a UN delegation into jellyfish people.
No, he didn't know about the jellyfish bit at the time.
But did he think they would all turn into like mutants like Senator Kelly? Would they become stretchy?
Well, he's just turning into mutants. I mean, X-Men mutation is supposedly caused by one gene, but it manifests so many different ways that, well, this isn't a science textbook.
Science.
So he might have been expecting them to all turn to a bazillion.
Yeah, I think he thinks it would manifest everyone differently. Well, everyone would be affected by it differently.
Wouldn't we just get a tyrannical, like, terrible, mutant, awful government then?
Why? They're still the same people.
We need.
Yeah, but now they have superpowers and they're politicians.
So?
What if he has the power of charisma? He'd be unstoppable.
That'd be my superpower.
In case you can't see this on radio,
I have great hair.
Since you can't see this radio land, Nick is looking at me funny.
It happens a lot. But what else did we talk about? This is weird. I mean, Wolverine's the only one with like a character arc. I mean, Professor X is in here. He does Professor X things. He thinks.
Yeah,
they talk to people in the brain hole.
Yeah, Sabretooth's whole backstory with Wolverine, they don't really get into at all.
So I think Rogue has a little bit of a character arc too, I would say.
And a Pat Quinn.
Somewhat. Yeah, okay. And Pat Quinn, who I forgot was in this. That was very
cute. I forgot who she was. She is in and out of this movie as important, like her accent. And then what she's used for, Magneto uses her because she sucks the power out of people and then essentially develops their power. Ergo.
Temporarily.
So he doesn't die. Magneto gives Rogue his power to power the kind of device which at this point only he can do. Right? Make the machine
really
work.
Explain that.
No, they don't explain a lot.
This was my biggest issue with his plot. So you would assume that you need some sort of ability or skill to control this magical machine that turns people into mutants. Mm-hmm. But she just is able to magically do it. If she's magnetic, so why not just like get a big magnet? A big electromagnet. And you don't need to kill a person. They just don't explain anything.
I could just imagine something straight out of Looney Tunes where they have this giant magnet and they just drop it
exactly.
On the thing.
Exactly. But that's what happened.
Drop an anvil on Senator Kelly. That was Looney Tunes.
I was hoping someone would say something. I have nothing. Wolverine is the standout star, though. I mean, we should talk about this, because for a movie with actors and actresses who are fairly well-known at this point, other than X, Magneto, and Wolverine, everyone is phoning this in. It's actually pretty poorly acted. Now, some people are at a handicap. For example, Rebecca Romijn Stamos has two lines as Mystique. Most of her is just completely naked. And sometimes the body paint that she's wearing doesn't hold up. And you can kind of see through it, which is, I mean, fine. I was okay with it.
The effects, I thought, were fine overall.
Yeah, it's
fine. There wasn't anything that's too egregious.
But, right. so for example, there's a device in there called Cerebro, which Professor X can plug himself into wearing a hat, and find any mutant in the world, which is the most convenient plot device ever.
Because so they have different brain waves, Nick. He explains it.
I mean, I get that, but how do you tell when a machine like that isn't working and someone sabotaged it?
Well, you clearly inject black goo into the machine's goo chamber.
Which causes Professor X's brain to short out.
Someone something very funny around the phrase goo chamber. I can't imagine why goo chamber would be funny, ladies.
How terrifying would it be, though, like, if you're rogue and, like, the first time you kiss a boy or whatever, you, like, kill them? That would be terrifying.
We're just glad her first sexual experience wasn't a blowjob. That would have been... Speaking of goo chambers.
I mean, that just sucks. Why
getting soft, baby? He's, like, dead on the floor.
She has to wear clothes. I guess she has to wear clothes and condoms every time she has sex. Like, that sucks.
Baby, can't we use protection, please?
They actually bring that up in later movies.
They do.
Do they?
That is a plot point.
Yeah, they do.
But Freeze Man is like, I can use ice to shield myself.
They actually discuss that in the movie. Yes,
I mean, not so directly.
There's not, like, Storm teaching a health class. Aurora Monroe.
We're going to have to wrap you in
name,
rubber.
By the way, I'm sure that's actually like
that's the name of the comic.
Name, but like,
that is your comic
Aurora
name.
Monroe? Really?
So is Storm normally...
Yes. I mean, it's just... I don't know. I laughed when I heard her name.
When Patrick Stewart had to say that with his accent went away so he could make sure he pronounced it correctly. Let that go off.
I did Shakespeare, I can't even get around this shit.
This, you mean, there are points where it's clearly the old English adage of do it for the paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, no, they're the ones who aren't phoning it in.
Stewart and McKellen give it their all. So.
Ian McKellen, I thought, was fabulous.
Well, and he's on screen a lot.
Yeah.
Like, he really is. And frankly, one of the best done scenes is the scene the scenes between the two of them in Congress when they're playing chess at the end. Like, those are very well done. Like, you get the point. It's all done in eyebrows, you know, like, which helps. I mean, now Hugh Jackman does some serious eyebrow acting more than once.
Smolder.
Sabretooth has glorious super eyebrows.
So, if you have the 2001 DVD edition like we have, one of the special features is Hugh Jackman's screen test, and my goodness... Apparently they cast what's her name first,
Anna Paquin
first, and so they're doing a screen test together. And man, Hugh Jackman is just laying it on thick. Ooh, ladies,
eyes smolder.
It was smoldering, man. I couldn't hold.
Without up. His what do you call it? You have mutton chops go almost to your chin.
Heroic, his hero chops. No, he's one of the best things to happen to Australia. Crocodile Dundee didn't work out. We should talk about the plot from the point of view of the humans. Senator Kelly's whole thing is that he wants...
chamber.
Right. Coochie.
Every time.
Oh, God. Every time. 60% of the time it works every time.
Is that what you were saying, Nick?
Okay, well, so... Well, I want to talk about why this movie is interesting. When we first started playing this movie, and it's weird at the beginning, Jeremy and I were talking about, well, people asked us a question, and we were talking about how this essentially resurrects the superhero movie genre, right? And this is Bryan Singer's attempt to update the X-Men, which in some ways are horribly dated, right? It's supposed to be about segregation. And yes, just last month, they desegregated the last school district in the country, in Mississippi. Yes.
Yeah.
They lost their final appeal last month. In Mississippi.
How long have they been appeals court for? Like 30, 40 years?
Yes. That's not hyperbole. It happened.
Isn't slavery still illegal in like some parts of Alabama?
That's true.
Yeah.
And then there was this weird problem in Louisiana, where the person didn't file the right petition when they finally passed the 13th Amendment 2 years ago. America, people. But
mutants need their own bathrooms too.
Mutants need their own schools.
The bathroom issue is a hot item.
It's a hot issue right now.
I was going to say,
I mean, that's not going to be a problem for Mystique. She can just change equipment.
What do Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton think of mutants? Just wondering.
Bernie wants to give them equality. Hillary likes it, you know, just for political reasons. Mm-hmm. And Donald Trump wants better hair, so he's going to use Mystique's power to develop a full, thick head of hair. Although it's still going to turn
orange. I don't think even Mystique could do that.
I love how her hair gets shorter and longer at various points in the movie for no reason. Also, anyway. She generates clothes. She doesn't put on, like, fake costumes.
As we saw, she can become a mini Statue of Liberty. She can do whatever she wants.
Yeah, it's the stupidest thing.
Yeah, the law of conservation of matter doesn't seem to really apply to her too terribly well.
Or the rest of the mutants, to be fair.
Well, someone pointed out that in order to shoot energy beams out of his eyes, Cyclops would have to be drinking gasoline.
It is his favorite beverage.
With his Oakleys.
His Oakleys are really to hide his hangover eyes. Come on.
Can you imagine, like, that contract? I'm sure they like, this is going to be huge, X-Men, whatever. You have a as long as there's a Cyclops on screen, he's going to be wearing Oakleys. And then the next year, they stopped being cool.
This is a complete tangent, and I can't remember what movie it was, but they had the Oakleys that were, like, really, really stupid. Like, wrapped around his whole head. And I don't know what movie it was.
Oakleys.
No, are you that talking about... Visor.
It was some movie where, like, they actually tried to sell those sunglasses afterwards.
Well, I mean, they do that a lot.
They were so tremendously bad looking. I know, but it's like...
Were those the bad ones he wore in the train station in this movie?
No.
You know those bad...
These were atrocious. These were like a wraparound headgear.
Those are worse than that?
I know what you're talking about, but I can't think.
It's not a Back to the Future or Judge Dredd or... I'm trying to think of...
I want to say like Demolition Man or something.
Oh, no. I mean, I'm thinking like an action movie joint like that.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking this movie actually does a good job of updating the X-Men slightly because it borders on the gay issue that was happening in 2000. You know, like that kind of the gay panic, right?
The second one is more about gays. I have a line, "Have you ever tried not being a mutant?" To the third one is about abortion. You have the mutant cure clinics that people blow up.
Yeah,
the first one is just seems about just prejudice generally.
Well, I mean, but it's still better than the. It's a good way to update the clear segregation thing,
issue. Right?
And I think that's really successful. And like Kelly comes off as a. Modern politician. You know, the way he plays it, it feels very good. And if you
it does feel very modern, especially what's been going on lately.
Uncomfortably so.
Yeah.
Again, as a historian, history is always unique and always repeating itself. So it's kind of... if you watch the special features, one of them starts with a commercial for Senator Kelly running for Senate. And it really could be out of any generic, you know, red, white, and blue politician. Campaign. Yeah, no, it's awkward. However, you know, other things to just think about. I don't know. This is an interesting way to start a trilogy, but I think there's some weird bits to this movie. It's got way too many quips. It has some weird Bond problems where it's just like, what if there were gadgets? Explain how his eyes work. And so, like, sometimes his glasses do certain things. Other times he has these horrible visors that don't seem to be very practical that kids stare at train stations.
Well, the kid thought he was cool. It was his mom who was not happy with it.
I think they should have actually done introductions for all of the characters instead of, like, Wolverine. Like, why weren't there more X-Men in this movie? Mm-hmm. One. And why didn't we actually...
Probably
budget. But, I mean, some of them are low budget.
Well, if Xavier had opened
To be fair, most of them were X-Men babies. Like...
Well, if Xavier had opened X-Men his school relatively recently, it might explain, you know, Storm... Jean Grey and Cyclops would have been his first graduates, and everyone else would have been too young.
I do like how Magneto makes fun of him for being an idiot. Because everyone makes fun of Cyclops as being a bad character, but he's like, Storm, zap him! He goes, we're in the skull of the Statue of Liberty. It's a copper chamber, you dipshit. Don't you work at a school?
I did like that line. That was good.
Mirth. I don't know. What do you guys think? I mean, we're almost to final judgments. We've been talking about half an hour about this.
The thing that I noticed about it, and I didn't realize until my second viewing, without credits, this is barely an hour and 40 minutes. I mean, they don't scratch the surface practically on this.
That might explain why it didn't drag, because something I liked about it was exciting throughout and wasn't too draggy and slow, true. Like, which that's the problem I had with Hellboy, is that it was too long. This one is just right.
Well, I'm gonna say, like, with a lot of movies, like you said, I think it's what 104 minutes. It's nothing. It scratches, like, it's very brief, but every line of dialogue seems to have a purpose, but nothing seems to connect. You know, like, they appear at various places. They make a reference to the fact that Westchester and Westchester, fine, but he was in Canada as seen before. He just shows up. Thankfully, being unconscious is a plot device, and so people just happen to wake up in places.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, well, it's useful.
I do like the hint they dropped to his backstory. He wakes up in a strange medical room and immediately just loses his mind.
That's true.
And it works. And, like, the dream sequences are very trippy, but they work. And I think one of the most successful scenes, and I want to mention it because it blew me away in that, it's one of the few times that the mutant powers... Nothing pisses me off in a character-based team thing, and the Avengers does this sometimes, when one character does one thing, and that's the only thing that they're good for, right? Rogue is the only one who can kind of traipse between these things. And so Wolverine has a nightmare. She tries to wake him up from the nightmare, and he stabs straight through her. So she steals his power to heal herself. That's clever. That's actually good screenwriting, and it explains the characters more than any exposition could. It's something that a director should be doing, especially when he writes his own script. That's where he's successful. A lot of the rest of it are just stupid quips that aren't funny, and Halle Berry's so underacting that she might as well be wallpaper. If they went around, if you told me that half of it was her as a cardboard cutout of her character, I'd believe it. Really.
At least they could easily make the cardboard cutout float.
You know what the same thing happens to a cardboard cutout when it has special powers? The same thing as Halle Berry. It's atrocious.
I was just waiting for her to say, like, something good, like, you know what happens to a toad when it's struck by lightning? It becomes French food.
Anything!
Anything.
Anything. You know what? The only reason they gave her long hair is so that he could put a fan in her face and her hair would flutter. Yeah. Everyone had long hair for that.
She could be so much more empowering.
Well, She could be so much more empowering.
In the comic book, she had long, flowing hair.
But not by this point, I don't think. Because that's why the later one, she has like this weird mohawk thing. Like, and this is the only one where she has the super long hair, I think. But I think it's part of Brian... I mean, I think, like we were all saying, it's low budget, and it makes it look dramatic right away when you just blast someone. Because she has the same haircut as Sabretooth, effectively.
They go to the same stylist.
Only one.
But they charge Sabretooth more because they style his eyebrows.
Well, I feel like could have made the female characters more, you know, empowering and more strong, such as Rogue and Storm. You know, for sure. But especially all the guys, it's like Wolverine saving Rogue, or, you know, saving. It's like the guys always have to save the girls. Same thing.
Well, and to your point,
Jean Grey overcomes her issues and uses Cerebro herself.
Well, but to Lauren's point, considering not that well. Rogue is the main character, she is pushed by everyone. She has the least agency of almost any main character.
And even Jean Grey is shown as weaker than Dr. Xavier.
Well,
but she...
Well, I mean, I know she is, but like, I don't know.
She steps up when he becomes unconscious.
Storm should have been much better.
Yeah.
I think we can... go with that, because Storm is ridiculously powerful in the comic books.
And even Cyclops is supposed to be the leader, but he's more like, but I'm supposed to be the leader.
It's high school whenever he's on screen. Stay away from my girl.
I mean, and like, we get it, he's supposed to be in charge. But he doesn't command anyone. That's why people follow Wolverine, because at least he's kind of in charge. But like, I mean, again, Rogue does more than like Storm does. And Mystique kicks ass, but has zero lines. It's actually
she has one good line when Kelly is like, Senator Kelly is like, "We need a man like me, dude." And she's like, "People like you are why I was afraid to go to school as a child." And you think about it, you grow up looking like that, and you don't have your shapeshifter power. She probably got treated like shit.
But she did have her shapeshifter powers.
She was born looking like that. Before they kicked in, she's probably had a really horrible, sucky life.
Well, B, that's a plot problem. Because is her mutant power that she's blue? It's not. It's that she can change power. So did she change color when she got her mutant abilities? A lot of this movie isn't explained. It's what Jeremy was saying earlier. Like, I don't know. Because, like, Hank McCoy looked like a normal person until he got the Beast thing, which happened all at once.
Yeah, he was kind of experimenting on himself, I think.
Well, because he had some weirdness, and then when he was experimenting, it went super crazy.
Yeah, his power was that he was just bigger and stronger than everyone else, but he thought that made him too conspicuous. He wanted to be in, like, CIA or something.
So yeah.
Try to deal with that and end up becoming the most conspicuous one of all.
Well, right. But like, I agree. It's a good line. It's well written. But that really does seem like inserted. Because that's her only line that really matters. Because every time other line she has, she's not someone else. Her. She's another actress.
She does provocative lip licking.
Yeah, I mean, right? It was very sensuous.
It was.
In the form of Hugh Jackman.
No.
Yeah. No?
At one point she's licking her lips.
Yeah,
where,
no, she kisses. Well, she blows him a kiss.
She kisses the air. She does,
blows him a kiss. She goes, come here.
I mean, Hugh Jackman, though. If you were Hugh Jackman, you'd tap Hugh Jackman. He's a good-looking man.
He was very burly in this movie.
But not crazy. I was talking to regular panelist Abby about this. He looks good in this, but by the time we get to the newer movies, he's so inflated he doesn't look like he could breathe properly.
Isn't in the comic books he's shorter and burlier?
Yeah, well, in the comic books he's like panelist Zach. No, he's a short, strong guy. Yeah, he's also much hairier, which they do kind of bulk up on later.
Which is why they originally offered the role to Danzig.
Really?
Yep.
They should have done
Glenn Danzig.
Yeah, I mean he's short, burly, hairy.
DeVito Wolverine.
I went to Penguin. I went to Dick Cheney.
No one would take him seriously for that role after the Penguin.
Oh, no, I would have. Oh, man. Can you just imagine a kind of short, pudgy, like not in shape at all, just like, I got you.
Let me catch my breath.
He runs like 10 steps.
I can, after watching Always Sunny, like, I just think that that is Danny DeVito now. I'm sure he's a different person in real life, but.
No, you're right. When he's well-groomed, he doesn't look like the same guy.
Yeah.
Living in a trash can. He's Oscar the Grouch.
I just assume that's how Danny DeVito always was his whole life, but he's been acting differently.
Also, this bothered me, and Jeremy pointed it out, but it bothers me. Sabretooth is his brother, but Wolverine doesn't recognize him or know his name at all this movie. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I'm just pointing out.
He doesn't know who he is, right? He doesn't know who he is yet.
No, because okay, I'm gonna get really nerdy. But if you did you see X-Men Origins?
Yeah.
They're in the same group together. The agent, the Weapon X program, they're together in. So he should know him. Yeah. Like, he should know Sabretooth, because Sabretooth is part of the same group.
Yeah, even though Wolverine lost his memory, there's no indication Sabretooth did.
Well, but at the same time, he wakes up as part of the Weapon X program. He doesn't escape until later in the comics. And even in Wolverine Origins, he doesn't escape until later.
Yeah, and
Sabretooth is chasing him.
Yeah, Sabretooth and Wolverine are part of Stryker's gang. Well, they're fighting alongside each other for like 200 years, and they joined up with Stryker's gang, and then stuff happened.
To be fair, they do fix that later in the second movie, but this is the first movie. You don't talk about another movie. You don't talk about Godfather 2 during Godfather. This is the Godfather of X-Men movies.
That's an insult to the Godfather.
And the X-Men movie. I think Days of Future Past is better than this.
Oh, yeah.
First Class is better than this, too.
First Class is the best one, if you ask me.
X-Men 2 is pretty good.
I didn't care
for it. I didn't like X-Men 2.
The best part of X-Men 2, when I saw it in the theater, they played a trailer for The Matrix Reloaded before it, and the projector broke down during it, and a guy yells out, "I'm losing my wood!"
I think First Class and Future Past were better than 2 and 3 of the original X-Men trilogy. Probably better than this one, too, but it's been a while since I've seen First Class and Future Past.
I want to watch number 2 again, because I thought X-Men 2 was really good. But we're running low on time, I think, so we should go around the horn here and describe whether or not we liked it. And so, Matt, I think you gave your input as the defendant. Didn't you?
Me?
Who started us?
Matt.
You scowled at me when I looked at you.
I'm... Well, because he's not truly different.
Okay,
he's
so, Jeremy, we're going to start with you, and we're going to go to me, and we're just going to go around the horn clockwise, because it's too hard.
I don't think it's a particularly good movie, but considering Batman and Robin almost destroyed comic book movies, it's a good way of easing people back into the concept of comic book movies. So in that regard, it does its job, because... a lot of the subsequent movies were better, so at least it opened up people to the idea of enjoying comic book movies again. Not a favorite of mine, but it's decent enough, I guess.
Lauren?
I was entertained. I mean, it's fine. Like, it's your, you know, much better than a lot of other comic, you know, Marvel movies out there. I was entertained for an hour or whatever, how long we said it was. Ian McKellen, I thought, was the best. Hugh Jackman was awesome. Yeah, decent. I would recommend it.
Excellent. Thank you. W.
I thought it was a pretty good movie. It moved along quickly, had... I'm not sure if anyone really had any character arcs per se, but I did like some of the little tidbits they gave to the characters, most of them. And it was just entertaining, and it was a good start to comic book movie, especially as has been pointed out that Batman and Robin kind of put the concept in the grave for a few years. And if you can, guess, give this one credit for the Marvel Cinematic Universe, you know, has to get the whole thing, had to get the ball rolling, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty cool with it. I actually owned it on VHS once upon a time.
Powerful.
Should have brought out that copy for tonight.
And it's at the Goodwill in Alpharetta like 3 years ago. Who knows what's still there?
How much money did you get for that?
Nothing.
You don't get money for Goodwill.
Oh, Goodwill. Sorry. Yeah,
no. He deducted 36 cents off of his taxes at one point.
Thank you. Do they have a VHS rate? I'm sure
it's deductible has something. It's probably nothing. I donate stuff to the library so I can at least deduct a dollar a book.
Is it less for a VHS, you think?
I'm sure. Because you have to dust off a VHS.
I can recycle that plastic, though. I mean...
That's the saddest thing I've
actually
ever
went
heard.
Online. There are very few places that actually take VHS, and it's only for the tape inside. They just throw out the actual case.
What is the tape used for? Do you have any idea?
Heroin.
I don't know. I don't
they grind it up I pure and directors really snort it before heroin. They start filming.
It's got to be on the streets of Hong Kong by 10 o'clock tonight.
Yeah, right. So, Panini, what do you got for me?
I think there's very little I can say that we haven't said. It was quick. I thought that was a major boon. Like, it did not drag at all. It was to the point. I think, actually, if they tried to do a lot of exposition and explain things, it would have gotten long and boring because they wouldn't have done it right.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable to watch. It was a fine movie.
All right. Well, I mean, my final thoughts are weird. I've never seen a movie, other than possibly a Bond movie, where elements are so successful and the movie itself isn't. The casting of Magneto, Professor X, and Wolverine clearly lands because they come back even in other series, right? And Wolverine gets spinoffs, and they almost did the Magneto spinoff that kept falling apart, right? X-Men Origins.
After Wolverine tanked, they canned it.
But, I mean, it's so interesting that certain parts of this last on, and other parts seem like, let's see what happens. Let's try, because it's such a generic movie other than those three roles, which is weird. It reminds me of a Bond movie. Like, well, they can throw out everything, but we're going to keep Q, and we're going to keep M, and we're going to keep Bond, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
And there's going to be two interesting scenes.
And there's going to be two interesting scenes and one or two action sequences and a climax in some weird location. The Statue of Liberty. We haven't done that since Ghostbusters 2, which was a movie that happened once.
Hey, that just reminded me of something. X-Men First Class is basically X-Men Origins Magneto, because you see him as a young man like hunting Nazis and stuff.
Well, no, I mean, it's interesting. I mean, they create interesting characters and throw them in a room. But if they had a different director, it would have done more. It just in this movie, they threw him in a room and they kind of sat around having high school, right? Overall, I think it's fine. Like you said, it's interesting that this came out, and then the next year, the first Spider-Man came out. It would have come out sooner had 9/11 not happened, and it didn't have a finale between the two towers, which it did. But this movie is passable. It was satisfying. To me, it's a late afternoon kind of Saturday or Sunday movie where you don't really have to pay attention because the plot doesn't really matter.
Now, how many movies on this podcast are good late afternoon Saturday, Sunday movies?
A lot of them, because frankly, that's the kind of movies that you put your kids in front of and you watch when they're young. You don't watch a lot of think pieces.
I guess that's true.
I mean, the ones that fall out of that are movies that are so bad that they would lose your attention. This never loses my attention. But if you go to the bathroom, you wander off, and you come back, you can pick the plot right back up. That's what's successful about it. The ones that don't work are ones that are so boring that when you come back, crap is happening that you don't care about, and then you wander back off. This movie keeps your attention for 104 minutes. That's a success. However, we are out of time, so tune in next week and every future week, and we'll put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Dude Letter Podcasting. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced and mixed by Ann Burns, and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by the Serenaders. Purchase their music through the Amazon link on dudeletter.com. Questions or comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com or contact us through myopiapodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at myopiapodcast and at dudeletter, and find us on our Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes pages. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. It helps us out a lot. Want to give us money? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia gets a piece of the action.
Well, Myopia is also brought to you this week by Wolverine's House of Spandex. If it's yellow, let it mellow. Tune in next week and every future week as we put another little piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.